Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Driving along Strathy Road or Elgin Street in Coburg, it's hard to miss the construction going on. The four-story building that will be home to the new Golden Plow Lodge, as well as the County Museum and Archives, is taking shape. With three-quarters of the construction complete, the exterior is getting final touches and the interior is quickly filling in. In this interview, you will hear from Denise Marshall, Director of Public Works for Northumberland County, and Abigail Miller, the archivist for the county. Together, they will fill us in on the state of construction, plus some details about what is left to be done. As well, there is the $30 million cost overrun and why it happened. But it is the amount of tiny details that must be attended to in order to complete this huge project that will blow you away. I'm so pleased to have with me today Denise Marshall, the Director of Public Works for Northumberland County, and Abigail Miller, Archivist for the County. Welcome to both of you to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Before we get into the current state of things, let's just take a moment to review how all this started. Now, the Golden Plow redevelopment began in December of 2020. So let's begin there. What was the Golden Plow and what is this project, this redevelopment project we were talking about? Denise, let's start with you.
Sure. So as you mentioned, so the Golden Plow Lodge, this is the county's long-term care facility. And the existing Golden Plow Lodge was identified a number of years ago that it was reaching end of life, and we needed to look at how to redevelop that. So in planning and all of the design and some of those initial works actually began well before December 2020, but that is when the construction was launched, when we issued our tender for construction. So it's a very exciting, almost double size facility from the existing Golden Plow Lodge, and it also incorporates our Northumberland County Archives and Museum.
And I wanted to ask you, Abigail, talk a little bit about how you got to be part of this redevelopment project.
Yeah, so our current facility that's in the Coburg Public Library, we have been operating out of that space since 2012 when Northumberland County took over the management of the Coburg District Historical Society archives. And so when that happened, the mandate for collecting expanded to include all of Northumberland County. So that's, you know, from Port Hope to Brighton up into Trent Hills. And so with that, of course, our collection grew quite quickly. The county became the official repository for a number of municipalities in the county. And of course, that really grew the collection as those records can date back to the early 1800s and span all the way to current day. And so with that, the current space, we really just outgrew it. And so with the development of the Golden Plow Lodge, it was found to be actually a really interesting and innovative partnership between the two facilities to join the Golden Plow Lodge with the new Archives and Museum facility to allow us to continue to expand our collection as well as offer more services than we ever have been able to before. So that would include exhibitions and programming.
Denise, how did these two things morph into one? What was the rationale when you were thinking about, okay, we're going to redo the Golden Plow Lodge, a long-term care facility, and this arts and culture aspect? How did those two things come together, please?
I think sort of as further to what Abigail's explained, that NCAM has expanded its mandate in the recent years and has really grown. And so there was a need there for this an increased and larger capacity and more space. And at the same time, we were also looking at how do we redevelop the Golden Plough Lodge and what does that look like and what opportunities are there. I think one of when we talk about some of those additional services and opportunities with the Northumberland County Archives and Museum is that being in the same space, those services and that opportunity is now there for the residents of the Golden Plough Lodge, which I think is really such a great resource and just something that's really exciting to be able to provide for the residents and their families. So, as I said, I think it was just opportunity, things happening around the same time, and we saw some real co-benefits to having them in the same location.
You mentioned earlier, Denise, that it's going to double the size of the current Golden Plough. In terms of square footage, how big is it going to be in total?
So the new building is going to be over 200,000 square feet. I think about 6,000 square feet is the Northumberland County Archives and Museum portion of that.
Denise, also, just to follow up on a couple of things, when we were talking about the current Golden Plough, not the new building, the current one. What is the condition of the facility? I mean, most people drive by, may not go inside. So, can you just describe for us the state of the old building to appreciate why we need a new one?
Sure. So the existing building has been developed over a number of years. So it was originally constructed. It's sort of a mix of different wings built between the 1950s and the 1980s. And it's really we've done a number of assessments on that building assessments, which have confirmed that the facility has reached its end of life. If we were to try to update, try to rehabilitate, it really would require every aspect of that building being demoed and redone, looking at all of those requirements, all the structural alterations, heating, cooling, plumbing systems, significant amount of work required that way, and also abatement because of some of the materials that were used at that time. So when you disrupt those materials, then there's abatement that needs to be done. At this point, we are basically maintaining the building to ensure the safety and comfortable, keeping our residents comfortable. But it really has reached end of life and is why we need to move into the new facility.
When this all started back in December of 2020, what was the horizon you were looking at to completion?
So the original contract anticipated construction completion, sort of that phase one, was in December of 2022. So obviously, we are beyond that original projected completion date. But of course, we have been through very unpredictable and economic time frames over the last few years, which have had an impact on our project as they have on all of the construction sector nationwide. So that global pandemic and the impacts from that have really had an impact on our project. So as I said, the timelines have changed and been updated with our new occupancy for that facility anticipated in June of 2025.
COVID hits, everything goes sideways. You said a number of times it impacted the project. Can you give us maybe a little more specifics in terms of that impact?
So I think it's, as I said, it's really a lot of the same factors that have hit the entire construction and housing and infrastructure sector. So with the economic environment, the cost of building everything was more significant escalation costs, material cost increases, high interest rates. That's another one that's really had an impact. Supply chain disruptions. And being able to get material and that demand for that material. There's been fluctuating oil and gas prices. There's been skilled labor shortages. So a number of these, again, have had impact on both cost and budget for the project.
You mentioned about labor, but in terms of the contractors and the subcontractors, have they stayed the same through both aspects of this, or have they changed between when you started and then post-COVID?
No, we still have the same construction partner. So we have our prime contractor who's on the project, and they have their number of subcontractors that they manage to complete the project. And it's the same one from when we initiated the construction.
Now, from a project management point of view, all of this sounds like a nightmare. What steps did you and the county take to keep the project moving forward?
So I think that the county and the contractor, we've really tried to work closely to monitor sort of impacts to construction, impacts to the process. We've tried to address issues as they arise. Obviously that, with some of the timelines, we've had to work through some various processes, contractual processes to update those timelines and those budgets. But as I said, I think that everyone in the industry has been going through some of these challenges over the last couple of years, and we've just been doing our best working, trying to collaborate. And we have a project management team that also works with us as well to help stay on top and try to really work together to try to see this project come to fruition, because we're really excited to deliver this for the community.
When you're looking back, what was the greatest challenge you faced during this time of hardship?
As I said, I think all of it is challenging. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges is wanting to deliver this for the community, wanting to deliver it for the residents. And when you're faced with delays, it's disappointing that you're not meeting those original timelines. So I think just being able to provide explanation for why there are delays and why there are budget increases has been a challenge. And as I said, we really want to deliver this. We're really working hard to deliver the project and want the community to have that as soon as possible.
Were there any times where you were walking the floor at night or couldn't sleep or taking a lot of antacid or something?
I think all of these, when you get into large scale projects like this, they all have so many different nuances and so many different challenges. And I think every day has something new that you're working through. So it is absolutely can be stressful, and can keep you up at night. But we always just look to what the final goal is and what we want to achieve. And I think seeing the progress that we have made, and especially where the stage we are with the project now, where you're really starting to see some of the finishing with the cladding on the outside, it's starting to really take shape with our vision. And that's kind of what keeps us motivated. It keeps us moving forward despite the challenging times and the stress that goes with it.
After what you've just said, you can hear that you've got momentum. Do you remember the moment where you started to feel like, hey, I think we're starting to turn a corner now?
I think with this project, and I think many projects, it's just you just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and it's small steps that lead to some of the big changes and the big momentum. So, as I said, I think every day it is just continuing to move forward and always focus on moving forward. And I think getting to the 75% completion is a bit of a turning point where we feel like we're kind of moving into that finishing stage and feeling like that we've got some good momentum. And so I feel like we are at a good turning point right now. As I said, these projects are complex and they are of long duration. And there's always a point in every project in the middle that's a challenge and seems like the end isn't near, but you just have to keep moving forward. And as I said, I think we're at a really exciting stage of the project and do feel like there's some good momentum and we're excited to get to the end.
Abigail, I'd like to bring you into the conversation. As you've been watching all of this unfold, you're not so much hands-on, but you're watching it from a distance. What's it been like from your perspective to watch the undulations of this as it goes along?
Yeah, from our perspective, our team at NCAM has actually been quite involved since we were brought into the project, as far as having design discussions and just working with a really multifaceted, incredible team to make decisions that we will be, living with into the future and excited to bring to the community. So it has been an extended process, but honestly, it feels like the silver lining, I think, is that we've had the time to really carefully consider a lot of aspects in our own facility. There's never enough time for preparation. So it means that we have just been able to really think carefully about our processes and how we can partner with people in the community, as well as the staff at the Golden Plow Lodge, in order to offer really spectacular services for the residents once we're in there. So yeah, it's been up and down, and stops and starts, but really, I think at the end of the day, it'll be something that we can be really proud of.
Denise, now that we're entering the final 25%, and it feels like it's only about a year away that it'll be doing its occupancy, how do you keep track of the progress? Like, how often do you tour the building? How often are there inspections going on? Who does those inspections? Can you just tell us a little bit about how you monitor things from now to occupancy?
So as Abigail mentioned, it's a very multifaceted team. So again, we have the architect is on board. They're the consultant of record on the project, and they're the ones who really are administering sort of the project through construction as well. So day to day, there are continuous emails being sent following up on submittals for different aspects of the building and things that need to be reviewed and approvals to move forward on, little decisions that need to be made every step along the way, whether it be confirming like the color of the grout, various things, mock-ups that are being done on site for some of the masonry or some of the cabinetry and the millwork. So there's always little decisions like that. There's continuous emails going back and forth, different approvals between the contractor, the consultant, and the county. And then we also have scheduled site meetings that have all parties at the table. Those happen every 2 weeks. In between that, there's also meetings to follow up on, hey, were there questions that have come up? Are there things that are outstanding that we need to review? There's weekly meetings that happen for that. And as I said, we have we're on site. So whether it be the consultant on site doing inspections, following up to see progress, it's the county and our project manager on site. Again, same thing, looking to see what the progress is, any questions, concerns, comments, just checking into, answering questions. So there really is that continuous communication through, again, email, phone calls, on-site meetings, virtual meetings. There's also, monthly progress updates of the schedule that are provided. So there's a lot that we communicate on and really manage through sort of project management of the project to understand progress and what needs to be done next and what's been completed and how we continue to move forward.
In terms of that, then, how quickly are things moving now? Does there feel like there's a difference in the pace of things? How quickly are things, you walk in to do an inspection 1 week and then come back in a couple of weeks? And are there big changes? Is it little changes? How fast are things moving now as we get closer? I mean, it's June 24th, 2025, that is the occupancy date. So could you help describe that, please?
Sure. And I think with this project, I mean, depending on the different stages and what's being done, everything moves at a different pace. And sometimes because it's such a large facility, they've been doing drywall for months. And so, but it is, you can walk in one day and all of a sudden, an entire corridor is done, which makes a world of difference. And you now visualize and you can see that. But, things like electrical, mechanical work, that's been ongoing for months because there is just so much to cover with those four stories and that large facility. But as I said, some of the the exciting things that we really are noticing lately is going in and seeing some of, again, painting on the drywall. And so paint being done, seeing, as I said, some of the mock-ups for the masonry in the room or for the millwork in the rooms, and, seeing in the bathroom, oh, look, this is what it's going to look like. And the flooring down in some of the areas. So as I said, seeing those finishing, contractors, subcontractors in there working, you really start to see, you can really visualize now what it's going to look like. So as I said, there's a lot of the work that is being done. Some of it is ongoing for months and months because it encompasses the entire building, and it's sometimes hard to see day to day what the impact is, or how it's changing. But when you start to see some of this finishing go in, that's when you really start to go in some days and go, oh wow, this looks a lot different. As I mentioned earlier too, with the outside, the masonry being done and nearly complete, and the cladding nearly complete, the outside is really transformed. And I think that something I think we've heard from people in the community too, that now when you go by, you really notice that, and it looks a lot different from the block and that was there before. So yeah, it's starting to see more things happening on site, and new things that haven't been happening with the states that we're in now.
Abigail, what's the experience for you like?
Well, seeing the walls actually closing in, that doesn't sound very positive. But seeing the walls go up and the drywall come on, like it makes it really real. For the past almost 8 years, really, since the beginning of the design discussions with us, it's all been plans, and plans only go so far. So when you walk into that space and really begin to visualize like what it's going to be for a visitor and a resident, it really just makes your heart flutter a little bit. It's really exciting. And so we can imagine once it's all cleaned up and ready to go, just how spectacular it really will be.
Denise, what's the difference between an occupancy date and a move-in day?
So our occupancy date, this is something where we get our occupancy permit from the town. So that's when construction's complete, and you can ultimately occupy the building. So once we receive occupancy for the new building, we then have a transition period, because then we need all of the time to do final cleans. We have different grades of cleaning that needs to be done. We also have a significant amount of furniture and fixtures and equipment that we need to move into the facility. And then we need to do some staff training during that time frame. We have ministry inspections that need to happen during that time. So it's sort of a planning, activation, ministry inspection, move all of that other equipment and materials into the site to get it ready for residents to move in. So that's why there's sort of a 3 month period there before we would then move residents in.
So when you say 3 months, we're talking September, October.
Yes, that's what we're looking at.
One of the things that jumps out when you're talking about this and at this particular time, it's the budget. It's been said that it's already $30 million over at 145 million, up from 115 million. You've talked a bit about the reasons for this, but can you explain just for taxpayers how it's going to get covered?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, right now we did explain that there has been an increase to the total budget from 115 million to 145 million. And I guess just to provide some clarity, that does include the entire project cost. So that's right from, again, the property purchase at the initial property stage of the project, the planning, the design. It's through construction, it's the project administration, like all of the furnitures, the fixtures. It's also the next two phases of the project, which is demolition of the existing GPL and all the landscaping and remaining site work. So it's an all-encompassing cost. So we would be looking at getting those funds. So the increase in funding, we do have a debenture with Infrastructure Ontario. So again, we would be looking at increases to our financing agreement with Infrastructure Ontario, as well as potentially drawing from county reserves to cover that. And that's something that we'll be determining in more detail moving forward.
Abigail, one of the things that sort of captures my imagination is the minutiae that has to go into preparing to occupy the building and the things like the fixtures. And especially for a museum, you must have special needs. What sort of things do you think about as you're preparing for this occupancy date?
Yeah, so thankfully, I don't have to think about all of this by myself, first of all. All of these considerations have been kind of baked into the process along the way. And so with through many, many design discussions and emails and back and forth, we've come to understand what a space like this really needs. So there have been a number of people, like experts in these areas, that we tap into along the way when we're thinking about what kind of special, HVAC does an archives and museum need in order to be a Category A facility? What kind of special lighting fixtures do you need in an exhibition gallery to ensure that, the displays, the artifacts that are on display are safely displayed and can withstand, whatever power the lights are giving? So there's all kinds of even shelving. We have shelving specialists who've come in to create a custom, high density storage facility for us that allows us to continue collecting, for at least a couple decades. And so every little piece, as you said, it takes such careful consideration. And we bring in experts to kind of support our decision making. To hopefully come together to be one fabulous building.
Denise, I want to talk to you about this aspect as well, because I know there's going to be specialized medical equipment. There's going to be specialized this and specialized that. But I got thinking about just some of the everyday smaller items that you have to purchase for, light switches, curtains, blinds. What color is the paint on the wall? Where are we going to have plants? Can you describe to us some of that minutiae that you have to drill down into to prepare this building once you get occupancy so that people can start to move in?
Sure. So as you said, once the design process is really covers so many areas, and as I said, we've been talking much more about the construction and the footprint of the building and the large components of the building. But so much of what will make this building the building is all those smaller details, right? And as I said, we've got lots of help who've been to make those decisions and would have been included in the design. A number of those aspects are already included within the contract. So things like some of the decisions on the paint colors and where the blinds will be and the blinds themselves are included in the contract already, so that that will be complete by the time we get occupancy. There is an entire list of, as I said, sort of before, these furniture and fixtures and equipment that the county will be procuring to fill in all the rooms. So that ranges from all of the very specialized type equipment that's required from the GPL perspective to some of the more, ordinary type stuff, again, for like kitchen utensils and all of those items that are required in that area. So, as I said, we have quite an elaborate list that covers all of the different areas within the GPL and from physio to the kitchen to the rooms themselves. And again, that is based on input from not only when the design was done and the consultant, but from the GPL team and staff, based on their needs and the requirements. And as I said, from the ministry requirements too, as to what we're required to have in the home. So yeah, quite an elaborate list that is sort of, again, all that is happening in parallel to the actual hard construction that's happening on site.
I'm just so curious. You're going to have to forgive me, but I'm just something like light switches, the plates that go on the outside of a light. So how many of those do you order? Is it like thousands, tens of thousands? Forgive me.
There'd be hundreds of those. I mean, again, when you think of the rooms,
Yeah.
and again, that'd be right in the contract itself, and it's something that's, number items, and there's a number beside the items that's provided. But as I said, when you look at the number of rooms and then the number of common areas and number of switches. Yeah, there's a lot. It adds up quickly.
I want to talk for a second about environmental, because I know that Abigail, for you, there's a very high threshold for maintaining a particular environment. In very basic terms, can you describe what is needed for your particular area in that?
Sure. And so for the Archives and Museum, we are looking to provide an environment that ensures the long-term care and preservation of artifacts and archival materials, first and foremost. So that's our main drive. And so we do have a dedicated HVAC system that is separate from the GPL in order to help us maintain the environment that is suitable for objects versus people, which obviously have very different needs. And so artifacts and archival materials for their long-term preservation really prefer to be quite a bit cooler. And so our HVAC system will be keeping things at a nice, stable condition over the long term across the seasons, just to ensure that the environment really isn't fluctuating, because that's where, risk and damage can happen to collections like ours.
Denise, environmental sustainability is a critical factor now in developing modern buildings. What aspects of this building are environmentally friendly?
So when we design the building, it's designed to a LEED Silver standard. And so that's the certification we'll be going after. And so part of that is really looking at many different aspects of the building to see what we can do more sustainable. So it looks at many of the different aspects. It looks at anything from stormwater management on the site, how we collect rainwater using planting drought-resistant plants outside. It looks at all of our different systems that we're using, finding efficiencies in all of our HVAC systems that are being used. It also is going into the building itself and looking at the materials and where those materials are coming from and the impact that that has on the environment and those sort of footprints. Again, just using more sustainable type materials, trying to bring from a closer radius. So there's a whole list and category that we look at in sort of all aspects of the building in order to reach that certification.
Abigail, once this new museum opens up, what impact is it going to have on other local museums like Sifton Cooke in Cobourg or Proctor House in Brighton or Dorothy House in Port Hope? Well, once this opens up, how are those going to be impacted by what you're going to be doing in your new facility?
Our hope is that we continue to, have the close partnerships and relationships that we do with these entities. We see the impact of us opening this new space as positive on the cultural landscape in Northumberland as a whole. We are positioned very close to the 401, which works from a visitor convenience standpoint. And how we operate now is, we love to promote the other museums, galleries, archives, libraries across Northumberland. And so when people visit us, we're not just, keeping them in our area. Often people are researching, their families that lived in communities all across Northumberland and often want to go on road trips to these other areas. And we are always promoting that they visit, different landmarks and facilities and, the roads that their families had come from. And so with this new facility, there's an expansion of opportunity for collaboration between our facilities. We always work closely with them now to support research, but now we'll have this new gallery space where we'll be able to put on, exhibitions that help, promote all of our histories. And so we're really looking forward to that. And I think overall, it'll be, we hope, a really positive thing for the whole community.
I guess one of the aspects that doesn't get talked a lot about is that this is going to be a tourist attraction. So what planning is going on in regards to that aspect of it?
Yeah, so I guess there's a multi-pronged approach to that. And again, we are so thankful to be a part of the county that also has an economic development and tourism department. But there will be, the promotion of our space through an updated website, our social media. We will be, pushing this as a new cultural destination for people to stop in Northumberland and explore really what we're about. And so, even when it comes down to, how are we directing people through signage, and, what services are we offering that, promote people to come to our space? Something that we see now is genealogical tourists is what we call them, but people who are coming to this area to learn because they have roots here. And so, kind of expanding our approach to creating experiences for people to come and visit and stay. And again, as we're, we're operating as a bit of a station to direct people to all of the places across Northumberland that make us really great. So
with 25% left to go, what's next? What can people look for in terms of what's going to happen to get to that occupancy date in June?
So I think, as we said, we are really moving into sort of that finishing stage of the project. So I think there's a lot of work that's going to be happening on the inside that likely may not be evident to the public until it's actually complete. But you will start to see the outside, finish all of the cladding on the outside of the building and the, sort of initial landscaping right around the building itself with being finalized. And really the focus will be on the inside of the building and said trying to finish all of the spaces and doing all of the flooring and getting all of the millwork complete. And as said, finalizing all of the HVAC, making sure all that equipment is in and commissioning of all of that equipment next. So there'll be a lot happening, I think, on the inside that won't be evident to the public driving by. But we plan to do updates to continue to show the progress to the public.
I was going to ask you about that. If somebody's interested, where can they go to keep an eye on this and to see these updates that you're going to be doing?
Yes, so we do have a project website. So we ask everyone to go to the website. And on there, as I said, we have sort of some previous videos that have shown progress at the site and a more recent one, which sort of shows the 75% completion. And we anticipate doing more of those as we work from now to occupancy.
Denise Marshall, Abigail Miller, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
That was Denise Marshall, Director of Public Works for Northumberland County, and Abigail Miller, Archivist for the County. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.